Hi, family. My name is Kendall, and I'm an addict. I love you, too. It's an honor to be in this room tonight. I was introduced to the program back in 1984. And I sat somewhere over on that side, and I was real toxic. I don't remember exactly what year it was. I was introduced to the program in 1984, but I don't remember what year it was that I came to this convention for the first time. And I am utterly grateful for the people that came before me. You guys are raising me in this program, so I thank you for that. Are there any newcomers here, anybody that's at this convention for their first time? You. If you haven't heard it by now, you don't ever have to use again. When I was here for the very first time, they said that to me. They said, baby. It was probably because they didn't know my name. But they said, baby, you don't ever have to use again. And I didn't have a clue as to what that meant. I had never been clean for longer than, I don't know, a moment of silence. I come from a long line of addicts. And I had heard about the program and a lot of people that, you know, were caught up. Where I came from, they just disappeared. But I never knew about a program such as Narcotics Anonymous. I come from a family of religious people. And they tried everything to help me. They took me to several different special places. They took me to a whole lot of doctors that had a whole lot of letters behind their names. They greased me down. They oiled me up. I was poked, prodded, dipped, levitated. And after all of that was over, I went right back out and did what I've always done. So none of that worked for me. So when I was graced enough to be introduced to this program of Narcotics Anonymous back in 1984, I hung out with you guys for about 7.5 years. But I was thoroughly convinced that somebody up in here was getting high. And I was going to find that one person that was still using and we were going to hook up. But they didn't expose themselves. But I hung out for about 7.5 years and I acquired some abstinence. Clean time. I was abstinent. I wasn't using any drugs. And that worked for about 7.5 years. But y'all also told me back then that if nothing changes, nothing changes. Y'all told me to work the steps or die. Y'all said a whole lot of really nice stuff like keep coming back. More will be revealed. Y'all said stuff like let go and let God. Y'all had a whole lot of really nice cliches and I still hear a lot of them today. The only difference is that I've learned to believe in them and I've learned to apply them to my life so I know that they work. I used to hear people back then say things like, each one teach one so that we can reach one. And I want to thank the predecessors, all of those that came before me, who invested enough in me to teach me how to not use one day at a time. See, I could maybe stop for a little bit, for a little while, to please my family or whoever I was in love with that day. Because I was in love a lot. I thought I was. Now, some of y'all might know my story. I've been engaged 7, 8, 9 times. But for those who may not know where that stemmed from, I was abused at an early age. And at a time of my life where I should have been learning about love, I was getting introduced to a lot of behaviors that actually helped me to be real conflicted and real confused about what love was opposed to sex. So if you told me something like you like me or you love me, I thought that was an invitation to sleep with me. I didn't know the difference. So I learned how to practice that kind of behavior because I was looking for love in all the wrong places. But because I really wanted to change a lot of things about myself, I got real creative and I said things like I heard the sister saying back in the day. So I wound up getting proposed to a lot. You know, to hold down on one knee, the ring, asking my parents for, you know, my hand and all of that kind of stuff, sending out invitations, only to have to go back and tell this person, you really don't want to spend the rest of your life with me. Hell, I don't want to spend the rest of my life with me. What I'm saying is that I hadn't done any work on myself, so what wound up happening is every time I met somebody, I continued to introduce myself to that person from a wounded perspective because I hadn't done any inside work. So you were going to always get the representative. I was always introducing myself to you, to whoever it was I thought I needed to be for you for that moment. You got whatever came out of the Cracker Jack box. But I am so grateful to this program because I had women who loved me enough, who took me up under their wing, and they could identify with all of my flaws, all of my wounds, all of my imperfections. Those sisters loved up on me from the core. See, when I came through the door, they knew exactly who I was. They knew exactly, oh, baby hurt. Baby is wounded from the inside out. See, they didn't chastise me. They didn't beat me down. They didn't grab their men to the side. They didn't hold coochie court. Or put my spouse at the time on ding ding detention. Because they knew where all that was coming from. They knew that I was just hurting inside. They knew that I was a little girl that had not yet grown up. So what they did was they loved up on me from right there where I was. And sometimes I found myself, you know, with some of my sponsee sisters and my sponsor, and, you know, they called it step study. Some of the old timers know it was pigeon fest. That was an opportunity for everybody to rally around me, love up on me, and point out what I thought they were just hating on me because I had a man. And they didn't. But what they were doing was they were loving me from that wounded place. They loved me enough to help me in that process. They didn't sugarcoat it for me. They cared more about me. And they cared enough where they were willing to hurt my feelings. But they did it in a loving way. And I love those women for that. And they would hold me in that little room, Kenny, and and they would ask me, baby, baby, who you with this week? I'm telling y'all the truth because every time I went to step study, I was engaged again. And we met once a month. But those women loved up on me, and they didn't beat me down. They didn't browbeat me. They knew that everything that I was doing, I was acting from a wounded perspective. So what they did was they loved me until I learned to love myself. And I am utterly grateful to those women. I'm even grateful for the men that didn't fool with me. There's a brother in this fellowship. He came from the same neighborhood that I grew up in, and he knows a lot of my family. And, well, ain't no secrets around here. I was out there doing what, you know, addicts do. And a car pulled up, and it was three men in the car. And they pulled up, so I figured this is a good night. So I started counting the money. 5, 10, 15. But they pulled up and they rolled down the window, and he said, "Baby girl, where are you going?" And I said, "With y'all." And they said, "Come on, get in." And I got in, and they took me and bought me a chicken box. There's a true story. They took me and bought me a chicken box, and that was the best chicken box I ever had in my life. And I joked with the brother, and he told me it wasn't that the chicken box was that good. Girl, you hadn't eaten in a while. But after they took me and brought me something to eat, they took me to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and not one of those men touched me. Not one of those brothers touched me. So me and that particular brother, we have this little inside joke, and people who know us, you know, I'll walk up to him and I'll ask him for the child support. But it's an inside joke, because what he did was he helped to birth something in me. You see, the seed was planted way back then. So every time I see him, I have a whole lot of love and a whole lot of gratitude. And because these were the people, this is how y'all loved up on me. And y'all told me that one day you're going to lose the desire. And you're going to have to give back what I'm freely giving to you. So when I sat over there those many years ago, a couple of years ago, and not remembering which year, but I remember coming to this convention, and I remember seeing the speaker up here sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And I'm telling you, I was so toxic and so sick at the time, I thought to myself, wow, that's like the addict award ceremony. I didn't know. But for the newcomer that may be out there, it's not an addict award ceremony. We do this on a regular basis. And we ask somebody to share their experience, strength, and hope. Our program is a program of hope. That's our message. And the only thing that this program promises is freedom from active addiction. There are no accolades. There are no awards. Ain't nobody going to chant for you and root for you. If you're graced enough to have a chair in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, fuck what you heard, you are obligated to give it back. So this is not about me. Although I suffer from a disease that wants me to think I've won the Attic Award, I'm only doing what somebody did for me. Y'all raise me, y'all teach me, y'all help me, y'all love me until I learned how to love myself. The sisters were there for me. They groomed me. They taught me how to dress. When I first got here, I was attracted to the reform pimps. But if I was attracted to a reformed pimp, what'd that make me? But the sisters, they did. They showed me how to dress. In fact, before I even got here in treatment, there was a sister that had to buy me underwear. Because the way that I used, taking them off and putting them back on, that was too time consuming. But these women loved up on me and they taught me how to respect myself and stop introducing myself to people from waist down. And as a direct result of that, I started doing some things different. And I want to thank all of those brothers that loved up on my husband, because y'all gave me one hell of a man. And I have to say that because see, I was told that I would never be anything other than a whore. I was told that nobody would ever love me. I was told that I wasn't good enough. All the things that we have all heard. Our theme is miracles beyond measure. Newcomer. If you don't quite know right now that you are creating memories that's going to jumpstart the miracle so that you can live beyond your measure, keep coming back. Because I'm married to another recovering addict, it's real important that I always respect his recovery, and he definitely respects mine. We get along real good in that area. But I ask him driving down, babe, is there anything that I need to, you know, anything need to not put out there? And he said, no, baby. You go ahead and you let daddy use you. And now I said, so you don't want me telling him about the goat? I still can't go to a petting zoo without getting nervous. Nah, the goat is fine, the goat is fine, the goat is fine. But I say little things like that to lighten the tone, man. I just told y'all that I was out there living real foul. So if you in here and you're doing and practicing some behavior that somebody from out there may look at you like you're a little bit off, we understand. We can identify. Ain't nobody gonna tell you up in here what you shouldn't be doing or who you shouldn't be doing. Although sometimes, and I did too, I didn't understand the gist of the fourth tradition, so I would tell people stuff, you can't do this and you can't do that. Check this out. We don't care who you do for real. Some of us that may be a little bit insecure, we care if you're doing our mate, but truth be told, this is not a program that will help you abstain from anything else first but drugs. All that other stuff will come later. All we care about is what your problem is and how we can help. That's all we care about. And every so often, you may be fortunate enough to find somebody that believes in you and wants to help you in your recovery. See, they're going to love you past that foolishness so that when you grow up around here, you'll start to understand that it is so much more to you than anything else that you've done. See, once you get here, it's not your deeds that's going to keep you here. It was the deeds that you did out there that got you here. We just want to love up on you now. And that probably wasn't just for the newcomers. But keeping in mind of the fourth tradition, I'm not, judging anybody. Because check this out. When we do that, what we do is when we judge one another around here, this is a program, man, we're supposed to be all about love and unity. And we are. And we are. Newcomer, be you. Come on in. Let us love you. Struggling old timer, welcome back. We need you. See, we say things, and we got a whole lot of literature now, a whole lot of literature now. We talk about the ties that bind us together. The ties that bind us together are unity and love, because without either one of those, we will not make it. We ain't gonna make it. When I got here, when I was graced enough to come back here after those 7 years of hanging out with y'all and then going back out and do what I always do, y'all told me some things real simple. When I came back, y'all said, Kendall, you need to work the program. You need to stop playing Russian roulette with your life, and you need to work the program. So I said, okay, I'm going to work the program. The program is real simple, man. It's in our steps. First step, I had to admit that I had a problem. My life was off the hook. I had to begin that process of surrendering. I had to be real honest about some stuff. That was my first step. Second step, we all understand it. You know, I was crazy. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. But that second step, the sanity is really not revealed in the second step. It's actually revealed at the end of the first step. And because it's a two-part step, could, that word could changes the game. That one little word in the second step, could restore me to sanity, lets me know that that particular step is contingent upon what I do. That means I got to do something if I want to be restored to sanity. The third step tells me that I needed to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood them. I had no clue what that meant. In a nutshell, newcomer, because this ain't about religion, if you don't have a God but a home group, use it. Real simple. We ain't gonna complicate it. We just need for you to get to a place where you're going to allow something that's greater than you to come into your life to help guide you through this process. That's all we're saying. Fourth step, you know, we're told that, you know, that's the boogeyman step. I'm still not sure why. But we're told in the fourth step that we need to make a, we need to take that fearless moral inventory. And real simple, I just needed to be honest enough with myself and practice one of those principles in the fourth step, courage. I needed to be honest enough with myself to look at some of those behaviors. I'm trying to, you know, get some stuff lined up so that I could see what was going on with me. The fourth step is not a boogeyman step. It's actually pretty helpful later on. The fifth step, we say, now you have to tell God and another human being the exact nature you're wrong. I didn't know if I was going to be real comfortable with that at first, but after I got into it, it was pretty cool, because at that point I had already developed a relationship with a sponsor that I trust and believed in, and I had a network and we were cool. But in that fourth step and all that stuff that I had, you know, gotten out, when we were going over that stuff, and that's the fifth step, just simply going over all that stuff, and it ain't all bad. The most powerful and profound thing that took place in that fifth step was the Me Too factor. I'll never forget when my sponsor looked at me, and her eyes got real big, and I was like, oh, dang, cat's out the bag. And she looked at me, and she said, girl, shut up, Me Too. I was like, dang, you too? But when I found out that we were more alike than we were different, there was nothing unique about me. Because if I really get honest enough and make the attempt to get to the exact nature, I find out that there's nothing that I've done that somebody hasn't already experienced and got to the other side. I call the sixth step my get ready step. And I call it my get ready step because, thank you, baby. I call it my get ready step because I'm getting ready to change my posture and my character. It's just at that point that God is getting ready to start doing some things for me that I can't quite do for myself. The sixth step is all about awareness and, you know, all that. It's a real good step. But it's all about me being able to identify and recognize some things about me, whether I'm really ready to give them up or not. Because, see, at that point, the God of my understanding is really not concerned if I'm really entirely ready. The main point is that I said I was. Open admission by my mouth is a powerful thing. So I'm in the middle of this sixth step and stuff is going on and I think I'm feeling better about myself and I think I'm doing pretty good and I'm not doing as much dirt. I'm not sleeping with as many people. You know, I'm not, you know, cussing people out. I'm just flipping the bird. That's progress. That's what the sixth step helped me to become aware of. I'm growing is what I'm saying. At this point in my process, man, I'm realizing that this sixth step is really about my spiritual conditioning. I'm being prepared. I'm getting ready and don't have a clue what I'm getting ready for. So then we move on to the seventh step and, you know, I'm humbly asking God to... And I used to think about it. If I had already said I'm entirely ready, why I got to humbly ask? And what I figured out in my step working process is this. I can be entirely ready for anything that I want, but until I humbly... See, I've got to get into a posture. Until I humbly ask him. And it's a real, I like those two steps because I like them. But I have to be in a posture of humility. I have to allow myself to decrease so that some of those character defects can begin to minimize. They ain't going nowhere, they just minimizing. So that I can start at least the process of becoming the woman that God, of my understanding, is preparing me to be. So we moving on and we in an eighth step. And, you know, eighth step was pretty cool, I thought, at first. They said I had to make a list of all the people I had harmed. I couldn't remember all of y'all. But I have a real good sponsor to this day. And she said, baby, don't be tripping like that. Just do what you can. If you can remember it, write it. Same kind of principle you use for the fourth step. If you can remember it, write it. God will reveal it later. So that's what I did. I just started writing things. And the first time I did an eighth step, I wasn't on the list. Second time I was. Some things had been revealed because I kept coming back. And it was a good process. And I realized that, you know, this ain't so bad. So I got to that ninth step. And it is time now to make a direct amends. And there were some things that I had done in active addiction that there was no way I was going to go back and tell them people it was me. So what I did was I created an environment that I could make a direct amends to some people that were not directly related. And I needed to be able to do it long enough until I felt better. It was expensive too. But it was worth it. It was worth it. 10th step, I had to continue to look at me, man. I had to continue to put myself on point. The 10th step is what I call that caution step. It's that step that allows me to possibly sometimes, if I'm not completely honest, get just to the edge and then snatch myself back. Because if I'm really being aware of some things, and if I'm really working on some of these spiritual principles and learning how to apply them in my life, truth be told, I ain't got no business going over the edge in the 10th step the way that I used to in the 3rd step. Not if I already said I made a decision. Not if I humbly asked them. Not if I recognize the harm that I've caused and I say I'm in a position where I'm ready to make an amends. Mm-mm. So then I get to the 11th step. That's a wonderful step. That's a beautiful step. It says through prayer and meditation. That's what I do to improve my conscious contact with God. And that is a beautiful step. The one thing that I know for sure, and don't take my word for it, But the 11th step and the 3rd step is directly related, man. They kind of flow together so cool. Because the decision that I made in the 3rd step to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, it is being truly revealed in that 11th step. It's being revealed in the 11th step. Everything about me now has shifted. Everything about me now has shifted. See, I ain't doing people now and making excuses. See, through prayer and meditation, that's how I stay connected with the God of my understanding. That's how I stay grounded in this process. It's through the prayer and meditation that the relationship between me and my God strengthens. So now I ain't got to take a whole lot of weight for dumb stuff with everybody out there. Not y'all stuff, my stuff. The 12th step, the 11th step is deep. Check it out when you get there. The 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Y'all didn't tell me way back then that once I started working the steps, I would get to a point where the steps would start working me. Because see, now that I done worked a series of steps, and I'm real comfortable with the steps because I've worked them. Now some things have changed all up in my life. You see, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and I'm trying to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, now the steps are working me and the script is flipped. I'm sharing my story outside of Narcotics Anonymous. And just in case somebody's saying, oh, that's breaking a tradition. See, we get to practice these principles in all our affairs, and as a direct result of practicing these principles in all my affairs, the steps are now working me. They're working for my benefit in my life. The 11th step, because of that prayer and meditation, now I have the type of relationship with the God of my understanding where I understand now why that 3rd step was so critical. I understand why they said, don't minimize the 2nd. We talk about the 10th step where we say we're just going to continue to take that look at us daily inventory. How about because of the 12th step, the awakening of my spirit, I'm not as crippled as I was because of that 11th step through all of that praying and meditating and getting with the God of my understanding. I'm able to recognize some things in that 10th step. And it doesn't always have a whole lot to do with me trying to keep myself from going over the edge. How about at this point, it ain't even about me. I'm trying to help somebody else from going over the edge. The 9th step. We say we got to make a direct amends whenever possible. How about I'm not all caught up in the loop with hurting people? That's a 9th step in reverse. You get to look at the part that you play before you cross that line. See, if you stop hurting folk, Kendall, you ain't got to have to go back and make a direct amends. How about you are willing to put yourself in the way of somebody else just to help them out? That's the 9th step in reverse. The 8th step, y'all say we got to make a list of all the people we had harmed. Well, when the steps started working me after I've worked them, the list that I'm making is not of people that I've harmed. I make a list of people who I can help. What I'm saying is after you stay around here for a while and you do enough work on you, it's going to be a direct reflection of what you do for other people. See, ain't none of this for Kendall. Newcomer. I have grandchildren now. I used to think that the worst thing that could happen to my grandchildren was that they would become an addict. But because of this program and because of our message that an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire, and find a new way of life. If one of my grandbabies just so happened to stumble through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous, newcomer, carry the message. Carry the message. This program that I've been graced enough to be a part of is life changing. My mama quote the liturgy and she ain't even one of us. She doesn't. My mama quote. And I tell her all the time, Mommy, I can't promote the program, but you go ahead and do it. She tell everybody she know, my baby go to the meetings. My baby been going to the meetings for a long time and them meetings are helping her. See, what I'm saying is, newcomer, if you work the program the way that the program is suggested, your mother will get their child back. If you a parent, your children will get you back. This program is a program that can take those of us that society has cast off. They counted us out. This is a program that will take all of that and turn it into one of God's greatest miracles. The most powerful thing that we have is an addict sharing the Narcotics Anonymous message. See, when we do what we do together like this, it's nothing like it. There are professional people that are still trying to figure us out. The therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. But the only way that our program is going to work for my grandchildren or the newcomer is if those of us who know the program work the program. Our logo this year is powerful. And I'm kind of old school. They told me to get a dictionary along with my basic text. But I broke down the logo according to Webster's. Miracles. An extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. So if you do, and you struggling, everything that you're doing, if you continue to stay in this program, it's going to work out for your benefit. The word beyond, according to Webster's, on or to the farther side of. Measure, according to Webster's, a means to an end. And a means to an end is any action carried out for the sole purpose of achieving something else. So when they called us addicts and dope fiends and all manner of undesirable type folk, they were right. But by the time we came to our first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, the miracle was already manifesting itself. By the time you worked your first step, you were well on your way. So you don't have to take my word for it, newcomer. But what's happening here this weekend is for your benefit so that your miracle can begin to manifest itself so that if my grandbabies need to come to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you will fan the flame for them like somebody has fanned the flame for you. So look, this is a wonderful time to be a newcomer. This is a wonderful time to be an addict. Because any addict, when you come up in these rooms, you are welcome. So man, we're going to have us a real good time this weekend. We're going to party. We're going to dance. We're going to love up on each other. We're going to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. So that when we leave this convention, every only person that knows us will be able to tell that kid's a miracle. That person's a miracle. So we're going to shut this part down right now. But I want everybody to have one hell of a good time this weekend. I want everybody to go ahead, have a good time, go to as many workshops as you can. Go on out there and create a memory that's going to jumpstart your miracle. Y'all have a good time this weekend. Thanks for letting me share.